Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Tennessee legend in the house, Pearl Cone Zone, Ron Slay. What's up, man?
I'm great, man.
It's been a while since we went on the sleigh ride.
Yeah, yes, it has. And can I say something?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Just to start this thing off.
It's your show right now, man. Okay. It's all you.
And I'll take it. 2 years ago, told the fans, just be patient. Be patient. It was kind of like, you know, football was taking us through a Detroit scene. And when I say Detroit scene, the water wasn't really clean. You know, it was that we needed a filter. Rick Barnes came in and the water that trickled over into Thompson Bowling Arena, somehow got a Rick Barnes filter on it, and it's been purified. So not only do we have bottled water, but we have pure water coming out of the faucet that you can drink. And all I want to say is, it's great to be a Tennessee Vol. I said it is great to be. I'm the voice for all the people that don't have the voice right now. I know you're singing that on all Rocky Top Mountains, in your bed, if that's your Rocky Top Mountain. At work, if that's your Rocky Top Mountain, in the car, if that's your Rocky Top Mountain, just sing it to the top of your lungs. That's
Ron,
what I'm asking.
You're very musical.
How did he get the program 2 years later, from what you're talking about, to top five in the country?
I think a lot of it was the preparation he put into it, the kids that he looked at and went and got, and believing in those kids, and those kids immediately buying into what he was preaching. You know, we saw guys leave the Quay Parker kid. He was pretty good, a highly touted recruit, and he ended up leaving. It wasn't a fit for him because you needed some blue-collar guys. You know, you didn't need guys caught up into the social media and to the highlight videos. You needed guys that were going to come out there and buy into what he was doing and lay bricks. And the great Butch Jones, I guess we took a little bit of moniker from him. We brick by brick, and we got a nice little house over there now.
You know, and we're going to talk all about the Tennessee win over Gonzaga, and we'll talk about a lot of other SEC games as well. Ron, you're hosting a show also right now, 5 to 6 p.m.
Yes, sir.
Down in Franklin, yeah, 9:50 a.m. Yeah. The Boom Boom Room.
The Boom Boom Room.
It's fitting.
Yeah.
See, I've seen Slay go to work in the Boom Boom Room on the basketball
Multiple
court.
Multiple layers there.
It really is.
Yeah. Could be a lot of different.
Whatever
it
you
is.
Want it to be.
Areas covered there.
Dreams come true. I think about the ladies' man from SNL. Break out the kvassier on the Boom Boom Room.
You better know. You might get a shot. I'm asking anybody, if you're riding by, just stop through. We'll have a little shot and keep the Boom Boom Room rolling.
I'm taking this. This is from an article from The Ringer from Mark Titus, who was at the Tennessee Gonzaga game, and he wrote a piece that he says the beginning. This piece was supposed to be about Gonzaga. I went there to tell you about how Gonzaga is the best team in the country, and he wrote a big article about how he believes Tennessee is the best team in the country and the team to beat moving forward. And he writes this: as long as Williams and Schofield are on the court together, Tennessee's opponents will have to contend with two physically superior players relentlessly beating the hell out of them for the entire game. And that's what it looks like. And what's amazing to me about those two guys is the moment you start to buy into that physical back and forth and you're exerting everything you can to try to knock them off their spot, that's when they finesse you. Both of those guys now have the ability to, the moment you buy into that physical play, Schofield can step out and hit a three. Mm-hmm. Grant Williams can go to work from the high post. He doesn't have to post up.
Right.
That to me is what makes Tennessee so difficult to beat with those two guys on the court. Do you agree?
I totally agree. And I think we got away from that a little bit last year with Admiral having his success and leading up to the NCAA tournament, as far as getting out and he getting hot from three and starting to shoot the three. And he came into this season shooting the three and kind of got away from being down low. But I think the Kansas game was a big teacher for him. You know, when Grant Williams fouled out, he went back down low, even though it was Kansas kind of had control of it. But he got to see, man, I'm strong enough to go down here and go to work. And I think that led right into the Texas A&M Corpus Christi game when he went down low and started there, then branched out. And when, like he said, when you got Grant and Admiral doing that, people don't realize the beating that you take. And those guys are in tremendous shape. Like, they are in tremendous shape. Very rarely do you see those guys cramping up And that's taking a beating and running the floor. So it's amazing to watch, man, that transformation.
Ron, are you worried at all? Things are great right now.
Yeah.
Are you worried at all about Grant Williams and foul trouble as the season wears on?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that he has to come to grips with. Some of those things you want to tell him to scale back, but him being competitive, that's what's gotten him to this point. That competitive greatness and seeing a play, going to make a play. So it's hard to tell a guy like that, especially being a junior, being thrust into this role, to, hey man, scale back and let him get a basket on this one. You know, it's better to give up two on this than to take a foul. But I think with the emergence of Admiral down low, and if he's playing like he is right now, it's okay. You know what I mean? You definitely want him on the floor, but you still want him to play with that reckless abandon, because it'll change things for the chemistry of the team if he's taking a playoff here or taking a playoff there. That's not what they're built on.
You know, this team that we're seeing right now at Tennessee, this was supposed to be what Konzo Martin was going to have in terms of a special group.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not going out and recruiting the top guys, but Rick Barnes has been able to take what Konzo Martin was doing and really actually implement it.
Right.
These are mostly three-star guys that chose Tennessee over Harvard and Appalachian State and mm-hmm. Wofford, and he's been able to mold them and develop them into something special. And I thought post-game, the way Admiral Schofield talked about Rick Barnes, said he didn't come back, you know, he didn't come back to score 30 points and beat Gonzaga. He came back because he wanted to be Coach Barnes, one of his favorite players of all time,
right,
or maybe his favorite player of all time. You can really see that connection. How special is that when we talk so much in college basketball about one and dones, about guys you don't see that often, that this is a Tennessee team that it doesn't seem fake at all. They right. seem to really love their coach, and their coach is also very hard on them.
Mm-hmm.
So both things can be true, which you don't see that often in sports now.
Yeah, you definitely don't. Like you said, with the one and dones, those guys kind of get away from that. But all great players, whether it be high school, they have a great career in high school, a great career in college, you always see them go back when you ask them to reminisce about their times at school or in pro careers. They always go back to their coach every time. Like, you always have a great team, but the relationship I had with my coach, either he was hard on me, he was like a father figure to me, or something of that nature. And I think it goes down the line for those guys. I think each unit, as far as the backcourt and the front court, they depend on Lanier like that. They depend on Des Oliver like that, and Coach Schwartz. So I think even all of
you're a big fan of that staff too at Tennessee, not just Rick Barnes.
Yeah, huge. The entire staff.
And he's been able to keep those guys together too.
Yeah, and
they've had some opportunities.
Yeah, Lanier's he's on the cusp, man. I can see him bolting, but with Coach Barnes being right there, I see him keeping them close. And if Coach Barnes stepped away, then see Lanier being the first guy to be able to bring into that job.
You're at Innsworth now, so I know there's a natural tie in there to Jordan Bone.
Mm-hmm.
And you've talked to us about him a lot. And it goes to show again that he really can be the X factor for this team. You know what you're going to get from Williams and Schofield most nights. If one of them's not great, the other one probably will be. And most nights, both of them are going to be really good. But Jordan Bone, when he can bring something offensively to the table, it takes Tennessee to the next level. He was 2-for-13 on Sunday,
right,
and they still beat the number one team in the country.
Yeah.
That says a lot about Tennessee basketball right now, but how important is Jordan Bone to this team?
It's huge. Along with that 2-for-13, he had 9 assists. So
yeah, he was great playing point guard, playing defense,
exactly,
though. He was
and
good
yeah.
on Perkins also.
Yeah, great.
Exactly.
Terrific on him. And I think that's you know, you get to take a step back and add to the team in another way. I do think, though, like we saw in the SEC tournament last year, if Bone picks up his scoring, they run off in games. It's not even close in the game. So I think he has to put it together. He's been coming out hot early, but the last 10 minutes, that's what I'm really looking for him to take over and be able to put the pressure on the defense and not be – I'm not saying he's scared to take the shot, but a little bit more willing to take the shot.
Oh, how long did it take you – maybe you didn't do it. How long did it take the painter to paint your Vols room? With the checkerboard around the wall.
I love your Instagram videos that you post, by the way, in games and also during Steelers games with your brother playing for the Steelers.
Most definitely. It took him probably about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Did it actually kind of quick.
It was great.
Yeah.
Whenever I saw it in the Instagram video, I'm like, wow, that looks very straight and even and perfect.
You should come by.
Let's do the show there.
The original Boom Boom Room. We got a nice bar. We only got two.
Live from the Boo Boo.
Live.
Special edition of the Midday 1A.
You said nice bar, and Paul spoke up for the first time this hour.
That was it. That's it. I know how to get them.
Brew me up some stuff that'll heal me.
Yeah, buddy. But it's real nice, man. I love watching the games in there. It gives it a good feel. And, you know, we got only got two recliners right now. So anybody want to donate new recliners, not the college recliners.
Always accepting that been
sitting
donations.
By the, not by sitting by the trash can or nothing.
Let's work in some calls, and then we'll discuss Vanderbilt and Memphis and other programs in the state. Mike, lead us off. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Ron, I enjoyed watching you play, your effort, and the way you would battle when you were on the court for the Vols. And my first question is, what do you think it's going to take to get Lamonte Turner right? Because we know how much he's going to be needed down the stretch in that backcourt. And also what you're seeing from Pons, and how good do you think that kid can be? Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, I appreciate you watching. I appreciate you loving the sleigh ride.
Turner needs a healthy shoulder.
Yeah, that's
the
key. That's it with him. I think it's chronic. It's a chronic pain. So I think with time, you know, you got to kind of treat it such as plantar fasciitis, somewhere along those lines. But when he's ready, one thing you better believe, he's gonna come in and be ready, cocked and loaded, and ready to go. You know, he's got a new nickname for me called the Hot Pocket because put him in there and he's ready to go.
Well, he's been a really clutch guy for them.
Yeah.
I mean, free throws, handling the ball late in games and close games, threes late in games.
Right.
So that's going to be key as the season goes on.
And as far as your guy, Eves Pons, I'm really impressed with him. But you can see the growth over the summer if you were able to get up there and see a couple of practices or see them playing pickup. His body is already NBA ready, definitely college ready, I think. Sometimes it's jaded because you see the muscles, but you don't actually know their strength. You know, he definitely has more muscles than Grant Williams, but as far from being as strong as a Grant Williams. So I think with him being exposed to the starting lineup and getting critical minutes, it's gonna bode well for him in the future.
You know, he just learned English this past offseason. He only knew basketball terms in English a year ago. You played overseas. You play with guys that you don't speak the same language. How difficult is that, especially for a group this tight-knit? I'm sure he understands and they know how to communicate with him in basketball terms on the court, but how tough can that be?
It's really tough. I've been in a position in professional ball. It's a little different because the basketball is universal and you kind of know the things that the coach is trying to explain. But as far as college and high school, I had the experience of playing with a guy from Senegal. In Oak Hill Academy when I was at Oak Hill. And the first thing he would always do is raise up his finger like he was Mutombo when Coach Smith said something to him. And that happened for about a week and a half. And after that last week and a half, Coach Smith told him, if you raise your finger one more time, I promise you, you'll be on the first plane back to synagogue.
Raising his finger like, I need to ask a question?
No, raising it like, oh, excuse me, I got you, Coach. I got you, Coach. Yeah. He said, quit raising your finger at me. And he never raised his finger again. So, hey, I guess they do understand.
Figured it out. Yeah.
You better figure it out. But I think Eves, you can see the way they're demonstrative with him. They got a lot of love for him, and you can tell he learned. He just now learned English, so that might help with the help side defense and things like that of that nature. Comes January.
Larry is next. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Ron. Unfortunately, I'm going to the team that beat Tennessee this year. I didn't get a chance to see them play Kansas play Tennessee. Was that Tennessee's game to win, and they just had some unfortunate things happen? And I also wanted to ask you, what do you think, what are some of the Dark Horse teams that you think that will come out in March that will challenge some of the Blue Bloods? I'll hang up and listen.
I do think that was Tennessee's game to win, Larry.
It was a little bit like Gonzaga, honestly, where they were up 8 or 9 and Tennessee came back. Tennessee was up 9 on Kansas in the second half.
Right.
And let that lead get away.
Right. I think if Azubuike never fouled out, I think we win that game handily. I think, you know, when he fouled out, that gave Chandler another position to really play. He played the 4, the 5, and the 3 and used the mismatch really well. You know, we were matched up pretty good against them when Azubuike was in. When he went out, the game kind of changed. And that also helped with Grant Williams fouling out. That didn't do us any favor, but I think we learned from it just as we did the game last year against Villanova. So all of that led to us beating Gonzaga later.
What do you think of Vanderbilt right now minus Darius Garland? And what did you think of them with Darius Garland?
With Darius Garland, I thought they were a new Vanderbilt. I thought they could go out and compete in the SEC. I thought they could finish at least in the top 6. That was going to be hard to do, but I think with Darius. He's a special talent, and I think he gave them all a different confidence, a different swag when they came out there on the floor. Without Darius Garland, I see them like, don't hate me for this, Vandy fans, but you're losing a top 10 NBA pick, so I kind of see you bottom three, you know, swing with Ole Miss at the bottom. But, hey, anything
that big could happen.
That drop. Yeah, a huge drop. That guy, man, and I have a
you
lot of faith.
You coached against him a lot when you were at Ensworth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's special. He's definitely special, and he's very efficient. My thing was, coming into the season, if I was Bryce Drew, I would have played him and Saban Lee a lot more together, because I wouldn't want to take anything from Saban Lee from the freshman campaign he had. He was a great point guard. I would have played Darius Garland at the two and let him get his shots off, because he's very efficient shooter, and Saban Lee keeps the pressure on defenses. And on offenses when he's guarding them 94 feet. And I don't think that's one of Darius' strong point, but that's taking nothing from him. But, hey, Bryce Drew did it, I did it, and now we got to see if Saban Lee comes back in and takes that role and how they will go into the SEC, because last year, man, Saban Lee was a dog. I went and saw them play against Colin Sexton, and he went toe for toe, bat for bat with him. So,
what do you think about just overall basketball in this city right now? You've got the Rick Byrd family tree happening with Casey Alexander, Lipscomb, and now Penny Collins at TSU. Year one for Brian Collins there, but Lipscomb, Belmont, both really good. It's a good year for basketball in this city and in the state.
Yeah, it is. I think all the way from high school to college, it is. The atmosphere at a Lipscomb game, I haven't seen a Lipscomb game in a long time, and I went when they played TSU. And that atmosphere, just to see how he had them playing and communicating out on the court, like, that is basketball. And it's a joy to see.
Watch back to the Don Meyer days.
Yeah, so yeah, buddy. Like, we were right down the basketball camp.
You didn't want to play those teams, that's for sure.
No, not at all. So I think Belmont is the same, man. And I think the nation is taking notice when they see them on the schedule.
Dark horses, the caller asked about some dark horse programs to watch as we get to the new year and push towards March.
Yeah, I'm not a strong guy on dark horses early. I think once conference play cranks up, I think then you get to gauge and see who's dominating their conference, and you get to watch them a little bit more. But I'm not just a big fan of dark horses, honestly.
Yeah, it's an interesting year to start. Just looking in the top 10, you've got some non-traditional basketball powers that are there. Tennessee, Nevada is seventh.
Furman.
Michigan has been good. They're fifth, very good. Furman's in the top 25.
Right.
Buffalo's 14th in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska's in the top 20
right.
nationally. I mean, you've got some programs that are doing really. Houston, who beat LSU last night, they're 24th in the country. So there's a lot of teams like that. I want to ask about one that's never a dark horse, Kentucky.
Right.
They've not been good. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They haven't beaten anyone.
Right.
The games they've played against even decent teams, they've really struggled. It's just there's something lacking. And Ron, you were saying this during the break, but it's a different ball game when you're not recruiting at a Duke level.
Right.
Which that's what Calipari's done every year at Kentucky until now.
Right. And if you go give him a R.J. Barrett, I think Kentucky's team is totally different. So with him not getting those guys, getting the kid Keldon Johnson, I believe his name, from Oak Hill Academy. He's a really good player, but he's more of a Robin, you know, for that type of team. So he's missing
Reed Travis is the grad transfer from Stanford.
Yeah, and they don't know how to go through a fifth-year guy. You know what I'm saying? They used to have the guys out there.
They're okay for it with a one-and-done take team, but when he's 23, they don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, they need thoroughbreds. You know, and Cal, he's always had thoroughbreds when he's been successful. So now we get to see later in the season if he's really going to be able to turn it around and see how good of a coach he is.
104.5 The Zone is your home for Titans football. Titans football. And you're home for Titans Ticket Tuesday. Sponsored by Coca-Cola. Tune in for chances to win during the Wake Up Zone, Midday 180 and 3HL. You could be at Nissan Stadium this fall thanks to Coca-Cola. Titans Ticket Tuesday from the official station of the Titans. 104.5 The Zone.
Penny Hardaway at the presser this week says Memphis against Tennessee is one of those in-state deals where it's about recruiting, it's about bragging rights, it's about a lot of things, and we have to be ready for it. Ron Slay, is he right? Is it about bragging rights? Is it about recruiting?
He's most definitely right. Hands down, no question. I know when we got to play, when we saw, when I was growing up and I saw Mingo Johnson and David Vaughn and those guys down there, I was leaning to a Memphis. Like, that was hot. But then you got to see the Corey Allens and guys like that going to UT.
Yeah.
And hearing about the Big Orange, and then football didn't hurt either. So,
right.
You know what I mean? That was a good recruiting tool also. But with basketball back up to the par like it is, it's a great recruiting tool. And I think they're challenging for a guy down there. If I'm not mistaken, it goes to Whitehaven. So it'll be a good recruiting tool when we go in there and spank them in the FedEx Forum. I mean, spank them.
In the sold-out FedEx Forum.
I thought one of the best things that both John Calipari and Bruce Pearl did was bring back that series.
Yeah.
They played every year between 2006 and 2013, and Konzo Martin sort of went away from that at the time. And Josh Pastner, I don't think, wanted to play that game. I love that Penny Hardaway and Rick Barnes now want to play that game annually. And, Ron, am I wrong to think that Penny Hardaway's talking about it means something in recruiting? Tennessee and Memphis are never going to recruit the same level of player.
No.
What Penny Hardaway is doing now is he is going to turn Memphis into a one-and-done factory like Kansas, like Kentucky, like Duke. Rick Barnes isn't going to be in that business.
No.
I mean, I feel like he's got the blueprint, which is completely different. I don't see Tennessee and Memphis going head-to-head for a lot of players. Am
I don't
I wrong?
Either. No, I agree. But I do think that because Barnes would go after one-and-done guy with the tradition.
Certainly, he would take one of those guys.
Yeah, hands down, no question about it.
If James Wiseman wanted to go to Tennessee, he'd take him.
in a heartbeat. But I think Penny is going to have to use that, especially his AAU ties and things of that nature. He's going to have to use that to his best of his ability, like he did, and bring in probably going to get the number one class next year, if I'm not mistaken.
What's interesting is he, right after they beat UAB, I think they won that game, Memphis. Anyway, they're 5-4. Right after they played UAB, he made a comment that Tennessee is a problem coming up. And I think initially on the surface you read that and you think, oh, because they're 7-1 and they're really good. But really, he went a layer deeper this week and he said, they're a problem because the players there are laying the foundation for Tennessee to attract the 5-star caliber players that I want.
Right, right.
That's why they're a problem.
Yeah.
And he sees that in the works in Knoxville.
And that's smart. I think Penn is a smart guy, and he knows that. So Rick Barnes has a head start on him. I think 2 years ago we played in like a charity game down at Tennessee versus Memphis, and we played at White Station, and it was almost sold out. So
it was an alumni game.
Yeah. So the hate and everything is still there. Like, we were supposed to move to Knoxville the next year, but
that was your last triple-double, right?
Yeah. Man, you know, a little triple-double.
He had a couple in the Mount Juliet Community Center League.
Talk to him, Chad. Now, give him what they want, Chad. Give them what they want. I ain't want to bring it up.
Took a couple guys on a sleigh ride, too.
They never end. They never really end.
Ron, what do you think of Penny as a coach?
I like him. I think he's a player's coach, and I think he's a smart guy because look at the staff he put around him. He's trying to attract the one and done guys, so he go get NBA guys. You know, he's got Sam Mitchell, Mike Miller on the bench, got Florida ties, you got NBA ties already there. And once those guys walk in as a group to your home, sets a different little precedent.
Ron, what was it like playing against Memphis when you were a player? I know you guys got into a bit of an altercation year when you played against them.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also one of those games, and I don't know, because we don't talk a lot about Memphis sports here locally, everybody knows about the Tennessee-Vandy rivalry here in the mid-state. People in Memphis hate Tennessee.
Yeah.
If you are a Memphis Tiger, you hate the Vols, and you hate Vols fans in West Tennessee. You don't have the same level of hatred in Knoxville for Memphis because you're not going head-to-head as much, but it's a more intense rivalry on that side, and that's what Tennessee's going to face on Saturday.
It most definitely is. And you got to think back. The hate is there because we were also stealing the guys. You know, you had the Dane Bradshaws coming out of there, Wayne Chisholm coming out of there, Terrence Woods, he was coming out of there, Scooter McFadden, we stole him from them.
Yep.
The history is deep. And you also, as the players, this is the central location for pickleball in the summer. So you get to play against these Memphis guys in the summer, and this bragging rights on the line. So that's why our little scuffle that spilled over into the tunnel, I think my freshman or sophomore year, that's where it came from playing pickleball. You had the Tony Harris, who is next to Penny as a legend in Memphis and is almost, well, they still love him in the city, but it's a lot of hate there, too, because Tony
Harris got a couple fights over the course of his career, if I remember. This against Kentucky, also, where he wasn't even dressed out.
Yeah.
Got into a fight.
With a big white T-shirt on. My man, T. Harris, salute.
Ron, how intense is the business of Memphis basketball behind the scenes in the AAU and high school circuits?
Oh, huge. It's huge. Like, I remember growing up in Nashville, I didn't know about the national basketball scene as far as high schools and coming up in camps and things of that nature. All I knew about was Memphis and Snap Hunter, you know, by guys like Quintel Woods, Paris.
Was it the
London.
YOBC? YOBA.
No, well, was it YO?
It was either YOBA or YOBC, but that was the AAU team you always feared.
Yeah, them and Memphis Ottawa.
Yes.
Memphis Ottawa. Two teams, Tony Harris, Robert O'Kelly, Will Smith, Paris London, Jimmy Snap Hunter, Quintel Woods. Man, the list goes on and on. I mean, goodness, they had a mob. And so anything you heard about Memphis and basketball was pretty much the Bible for us here in Nashville until we started being able to get an AU team and go down there and play them, and you really got to see how nasty the rivalry was.
Where were those pickup games here? What was pickup central for those?
Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt was pickup central, and you could have anybody walking into the gym.
What time?
It was always about 12 or 1. You know, everybody would go work out in the morning, go eat lunch, and then go to Vanderbilt.
These were college players at the time that would just show up and start playing.
College pro guys, even when the guys like Joe Johnson and those guys left and went to the NBA, they were still coming back. So, like, Vandy.
There's going to be people showing up now to watch these games in the summer.
Yeah, Ron needs the floor.
Hold up, man. Listen, Vandy. You all were doing a great job. You all were competing in the SEC. You had guys that could really, really play. And it was because you had the pickup games there. Once Vandy cut out Coach Stallings. Coach Stallings cut out the pickup games at Vandy and made it where you had to have at least 3 Vanderbilt players on the floor at all times on each team. So it was like, what are we showing up for? Y'all can just have it and go on and go play.
It's an inter-squad scrimmage at that point.
Right. Like, that's not what we're here for. We're here to compete. If you can't stay on, you can't stay on.
Why'd they change that?
I have no earthly idea. I guess guys weren't getting picked up. You know, but who's going to get picked up over Ron Mercer when he's in the gym? Dante Jones when he's in the gym? It's just not happening. I'm sorry, Joe Johnson when he come back. Come on, dog. This is not what it is. But you got to see what happened. They fell off, especially after Shane Fosters and Derek Byers, those guys left. Mario Moore, like, it was over.
But it wouldn't be a great training ground for your program go up against these NBA guys
on a regular basis.
That's coming to you. It's not like you're having to go somewhere else and scrimmage those guys.
Right.
And by the way, it totally sounds like something Kevin Stallings would have done.
Oh, he did it.
I hear that, and I'm like, I'm shocked that he allowed you guys to go in the gym at all.
Yeah.
Like,
he had different guys. He had different guys there, though. They would cut from a different cloth. Atiba Prater, James Strong. Like, they wouldn't care. They would come on in, but I think when they got the new generation of guys coming in, they looked at it as we were getting familiar with what they were doing there, and it was affecting them in the SEC play, which it wasn't. Either you're good or you're not. You got it or you don't.
What was at stake in these pickup games?
Fights in the tunnel when you faced them in the regular season?
5 minutes on the clock. I think the games used to go to 10, twos and ones. And it used to be so many people in the gym, and it was scorching hot.
So you're just running five new guys out constantly.
With two courts. You got a loser court and a winner court. Winner court's in the main court, on the main floor, Memorial Gym. And the loser court right here on the right, people on the left just shooting. But crowds used to start showing up. That's when the summer league was really doing good here. Crowds used to show up to watch us play pickup, and that was the show. Like,
and this
was
at Memorial Gym?
Yes, sir. Like, oh, man, it was beautiful. Easily, you can come in there, it's easily 150 people, probably 35 to 40 playing pickup.
When you had your issues with Vanderbilt as a player in that gym, did some of that stem from playing there during the summer?
Most definitely. Okay. Most definitely. But they corrected all that by my senior year, somehow bringing Pearl Cone's band in there and letting them play before we played Vanderbilt. And Mario Moore can contest. They never let it down. Never let it down. Matt Freezy, shout out to Matt Freezy, too. He was a guy that wouldn't complain about playing the other guys also.
He could play.
No, Matt could go. I mess with
Freezy. I think Shane Foster would have loved a competition like that.
Yeah, he would. And that's the thing. Like, they all got better, I'm telling you. Because you can't get better playing against. If I play on Chaz on my team, I play against him every single day. I know Chaz moves. Like, we had guys from UT.
If I played against Ron every day, I would get better.
Right. I mean, it just is what it is.
He's not getting any better. It's meeting in the middle. He's getting worse. I'm getting better. See how that works?
But you got to see and you got to hear about guys like, we had guys from UK coming down here play, Bogans, Cliff Hawkins, all those guys, people coming from Knoxville to come play.
I'm guessing Drew Arkansas. Maddox was a part of that.
Yeah, everybody, like everybody that could play would be in that gym. And once they took that away, man, the basketball scene kind of died away.
We need, to get this back, and we need to broadcast live during the summer with the Midday 180.
Oh, that'll be lovely.
During these lunch games.
Bryce, open up them doors, baby.
Yeah, let's get it back. Bryce Drew or anyone at Vanderbilt's listening.
Ron, are you playing or are you broadcasting?
I'm doing both. I got two games in me. I definitely got two games, and then I'm going to get the mic. It'll be two of the best games out there.
Hey, leave us with this, because there are 100 people that moved to Nashville today. Paul, how many people have moved here? It's 143 today.
66.
66 of the 100 are already here. Okay. They don't know the Pearl Cone Band story your senior year at Memorial Gym.
Ah, well, let me give it to you. Senior year, Tennessee playing Vanderbilt, my last game in Memorial Gym. I don't never come out and warm up. Ever come out and warm up. Because it just doesn't make any sense to come out there, bust a sweat, come back in, relax, go back out and bust another sweat. It's just dumb to me. So when you go out there, you go out there. So I'm in the locker room relaxing. First John Higgins comes in. He said, boy, Big Slay, you're going to love it out there. I'm like, what's going on, dog? You know what I'm telling me? So I'm like, okay, I'm back in my zone, got my headphones on. CJ Watson comes in. He got a smile from ear to ear. And if you know CJ, that's his thing. When he's smiling, something's going on. He's a quiet storm for a reason. So he just came in shaking his head. Then Crump, who can't hold water, Brandon Crump came in. Oh, man, you got to see it when you get out there. You got to see it. I'm like, man, what's going on? So Coach Peterson gives his little spiel. We're getting ready to go through the tunnel. Vanderbilt goes out first and loud. I want to say it was a break for some reason, but we get ready to come out, and I'm the last one to come out. As soon as I come out, Pearl Cone has a song. Tennessee State has the same. And I said, wait a minute. I know that is not a Pearl Cone band. And I looked over there, and they were all pumping their fists as I do when I get a dunk or something. Hey, man, I almost lost my mind. I said, I know they didn't make this mistake. It felt like a home game. It felt like I actually went out to North Nashville and went to Pearl Cone, and we was having our last game there. And
it's as if they tried to pay tribute to you.
Yeah, did they just not make the connection?
I don't know, but I'm glad they didn't if they did. I'm so glad.
What kind of game did you have?
Oh, great game. I probably had about 26. I had Mario on my show, and he brought it up. He was like, man, I don't know who his idea that was, but that was the silliest thing. But I do remember catching it on the late game and going backwards on right in front of Vanderbilt's bench. Backwards dunk, that is, just to let people know.
Ron Slay's the host of the Boom Boom Room, 5 to 6, Friday afternoons on 9:50 a.m. down in Franklin.